kids that come to our camp, you know, I tell them, I'm like, look, if we're in there to see you, we watch you from the second you get out of your car, the second you get back in your car. You know, we're watching how you treat your parents. We're watching what you do pregame. We're watching what you eat at the concession stand. You know, all those things, they're all important.
No good player has ever said, well, who else is going to be the shortstop? The best players just say, sign who you want. I'm going to beat him, right?
And the other thing for baseball players, if you want to be a great baseball player and play at the highest levels, then be an athlete first.
Hello and welcome to the Coach's Corner podcast, where the coaches hang out with Walter. Today's podcast is brought to you by the Baseball Blue Book. If it has to do with baseball, it has to be in the book. The question for you, are you in the book? Now let's join our host, Walter Beattie.
Hello and welcome to another edition, Thursday's Coach's Corner, where each and every Thursday, myself and on occasion when it's not in season, Coach Dave Serrano and I will talk with college coaches from around the country, all levels, all divisions, in hopes of sharing information that you as student athletes, as well as families, parents, can utilize with regard to your student athletes' current or future development. Today, I am joined with someone I've had the pleasure of knowing both on and off the field as both a dad, parent, as well as a fellow coach, associate head coach slash pitching coach at Vanderbilt University, anchored down. Scott Brown. Scott, thank you very much for joining us today. I know it's in season and I know you're a busy man.
No, it's great to see you and I really enjoy it. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah, very, very welcome. First, before I get started, what is it like to be kind of like, I know you and Mary have the three girls and Noel and your son, but it's almost like you and Corbs and Bax, you have sons all over, you know, baseball world this time of year, you know, who makes it, who's in the show, who's getting assigned. What's it like seeing all your former players, you know, both pitchers as well as position players, making their way throughout professional baseball?
Well, it's very rewarding. I mean, you watch these guys kind of grow in their journey and through their time here at Vanderbilt, and then you watch them even after they leave here and they continue to develop, you know, but the cool thing is knowing, you know, the foundation that Corbs builds here and, you know, we kind of administer as assistant coaches and keep it going just to watch those guys, you know, achieve their dreams, success, and longevity. It's great. You know, you really do. You know, I don't watch a ton of Major League Baseball just because of our schedule, but it's just awesome seeing those guys up there and, you know, watch them throughout the time through the year and catching them usually hopefully in a playoff run if that happens. But the best part is when they come back, you know, and work out here in the off season and share their experiences, you know, good, bad, indifferent, doesn't matter. Just, you know, sharing their experiences throughout the time and what they've learned and, but you know, and then their ability and want to, you know, give back to the program through knowledge and care. These guys, you know, they really care, you know, Corbs, myself and Bax don't get a chance to see them in person, you know, at that level too often, if ever, you know, really just because of our schedules. But, you know, those guys knowing we're watching and then, you know, coming back here and their pride in Vanderbilt is just, it's awesome to see.
Well, I know that it's reciprocal getting a chance to talk to some of the guys throughout the years. And I think it's a tremendous program that has been built at Vanderbilt over the last 22 some odd years. You know, today I really want to take the time to talk and discuss with you. You know, you're a former college pitcher at Cortland University. You're also, you've been a pitching coach at St. John's. You've been now, I believe we're going on year, 12 at Vanderbilt. And so I really want to talk to you as more of a parent and a former pitcher about just throwing and pitching at younger ages. And we were having a great dialogue offline here about your son, Nolan. Now, for those of you that may not have seen this, Scott, talk a little bit about your Little League experience, you know, with regard as a dad, because I know Nolansville, I believe, went to the Little League World Series. What was that like as a parent and as a coach to watch your son participate in that event?
Well, it's it's one of the meccas of baseball, you know, and you only get, you only really get one opportunity when you're 12 to do that. And it's like almost every kid's dream. So just, you know, the ability for Mary and I just to sit back and watch that team, you know, go through that journey was incredible. And then, you know, to see his personality at a young age come out inside that team, you know, in some big moments and how he handled it, you know, as kind of a leader, and, you know, the humility he kind of portrayed during that time frame was cool. You know, he really was never affected by the big stage, you know, he just wasn't phased. And that was the coolest thing to see as a parent, you know, because when you're 12, the emotions, good and bad, kind of a roller coaster, and they're normal. Those are normal emotions for young kids. You know, parents should not ever get, you know, bent out of shape when their kid, you know, is crying or upset at that age, or, you know, fired up, because that's raw emotion as a young kid those are great learning experiences. So, but it was just really fulfilling, just the opportunity. It almost felt like, wow, this is surreal. You know, I'm sitting here thinking just Omaha, his ability as a young kid to come to Omaha and watch us as a, you know, in 2014 and win that thing and be a part of it and see it at a young age, and then through the years, you know, going there 3 or 4 times. And then his opportunity, I don't doubt that his experiences inside this program at a young age. I mean, Corpse talks about it all the time. You know, when he was 4 years old, he was in here in the locker room, and he's hanging out with these guys and just being around these types of people in his life, I think really set him up for that. You know, and it was just, it really was. It was really just such a fulfilling journey to watch those kids compete as a team. And, you know, to see him out there on that field, you're like, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to pitch in Williamsport. And, you know, he did a great job. And the cool thing was, he just, you know, they lost, but he wasn't too emotional about it, good and bad. He, you know, he felt like, you know, this is just such a great experience. Let's just keep coming back and try to win the rest of these games. So it was great.
You know, one of the reasons why I wanted to really have a talk with you is because of that progression throughout Little League and then to the big field. You know, we have a lot of discussion and dialogue, much of it on the social media platforms, you know, what's the right pathway. And I think you and I share something in common with regard to allowing the process to occur kind of through Mother Nature and more natural than pushing the envelope, so to speak. Talk a little bit about Nolan's progression post Little League, you know, the adapting to the bigger diamond, maybe, you know, throwing routines, things like that. What are some of the things? I know there's been a big growth spurt, but talk a little bit about his progression from 13 through now as a high school freshman.
Sure. Well, Nolan had a good foundation as a young player with throwing the ball in the strike zone. You know, from a young age, just the ability to pitch and throw strikes. And, you know, there wasn't many flaws in, you know, when you're looking at it from a throwing action standpoint, where you're like, you know, the arm works, he's athletic, he plays baseball, you know, and and he's got a feel for the ball. So I think one of the biggest challenges is, you know, everyone at this, I don't want to say everyone, but most people look at velocity as, you know, the key contributor to success. And it certainly helps players at all levels. We know that, but you can have success in different ways. And, you know, the big thing that I've always talked to him about is, you know, don't compare yourself to anybody else at your age, the 14U you're playing, the 13U, you don't know how old they are. It doesn't, none of that really matters. What matters is your journey, how you're approaching this game. And this is a marathon. You love baseball. You work at it. You love it. And you want to be good. You're going to be fine. And there's no real parameters on this race. You might not be the best 12-year-old or 13-year-old in the country. You might not even be the best 12, 13-year-old on your own team. But when you have those kind of that kind of passion for what you're doing, you want to play. And you want to get on the field and you want to have an opportunity to perform and fail. I think that's a big thing. So the biggest thing I talked to him about was the not comparison. And then I talked to him when he was 13. I said, you know, this is going to be a huge jump. In my opinion, it's kind of a too large of a jump from the 50-foot mound to the 60 and a half, you know, 60 feet, 6 inches. It's a large jump for these kids. And, you know, the big thing I told him that year was get acclimated to the field. Do not try to throw the ball by hitters like you're, just execute your stuff, because regardless of if you throw 77 or 84, you're probably not throwing it by somebody at that age just because of the distance that they now have to watch the ball travel. It's just not going to do it. So the biggest thing you can do is learn how to shape your pitches and throw strikes, control the game, work on your pickoff move, which I'm still working with them on to this day, believe it or not, as a left-handed pitching coach with a left-handed son.
Yes, indeed.
And, you know, from there, it was when he joined a 14U team that was, you know, I guess you could say one of the higher touted teams in the area. They wanted to go through a whole development phase, and I, you know, with weighted baseballs and stuff like that. And I just said, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to train all winter. Personally, I said, he plays basketball. And, you know, I really firmly believe at a young age, when you're growing, you need some downtime from throwing. It's just, it's part of the nature of how things are done. I really strongly believe in that. Could it affect you coming out of the gate? Yeah. You know, he might've had a slow start a little bit in his travel baseball seasons the last couple of years, or his middle school seasons. But as the season goes on, you see the growth take place, and there's also a real good foundation built, because he hasn't been throwing a ball chasing numbers, you know. And if you think about just the reality of it, if you improve, you know, 2 to 3 miles an hour with velocity, how much reward is that going to give you during the season at age 13, 14, 15?
Right.
Versus the risk of, like, what are you doing to your natural growth development down the road? And I get it. I know parents and people out there really, you know, want their kids to excel and be good at what they do. But it just takes patience. It takes patience, and it takes the right messages to the kids to, you know, to just hang in there and keep going. And the other reality is, and you're on the other end of this, because your son, you know, is playing at the highest level, but, you know, that is such an accomplishment. There's only been 20, you know, 1,000 baseball players that play in the big leagues. And most of these guys that play, the window is really short, whether it's through high school, whether it's, you know, they go on to college and play, and then it's over,
right?
You know, it's over for 98-99% of the players. So the key thing is, you know, keeping that perspective and saying, listen, it's about now and playing and doing this and that. We're not training big leaguers like at a 13, 14 year old age. If they do that, they're wired right. There's probably fibers that they've been blessed with to get there. And, you know, the ability to be available to play so that you can get better at the skill of the game is such an important piece of the puzzle. So,
well, I think you really bring up some really great topics that I think a lot of parents as a whole, you know, really want to hear from people such as yourself. I mean, I can get up and pontificate, but I'm a dad. You're a Power 5 Division 1 elite SEC coach. You recruit, you see it, but now from the eyes, you know, from the visual of it as a dad, I really love the fact. I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, Tyler never threw hard enough to be one of those guys that really garnered a lot of attention, but he could pitch and he was a multi-sport athlete. Now, is that the right way or the right method? All I know is, and this is really the main point that I think you're making, is the kids only have one childhood, you know, and we don't really need to script or predetermine, you know, a destination. Allow them to, and you nailed it, allow them to fail, allow them to fall. They figure things out. They're able to put pieces together. But talk a little bit about, you know, Nolan and you guys are playing catch. You're not chasing numbers. You mentioned pitch shape, which I would love for you to discuss, because that's the vernacular that's kind of out there all over social media, shaping, pitching, tunneling, et cetera. Talk a little bit about that with regard to you and Nolan talking about pitch shape as opposed to pitch velocity.
Yeah. So during COVID, I was very fortunate from that time, because he, you know, was 10 years old. He was 11 actually at that time, turning 11. So, you know, he wanted to practice and train every day and just play baseball. So we had an opportunity to get to the field just about every day. Now, I didn't make him go. I just said, hey, do you want to go? But if we go, we're going to work on things. It's not going to be just a, you know, father son catch in the backyard. We're just, you know, we'll work at the game. We'll have fun. We'll take some batting practice. And, you know, him and his buddy and another dad and I just went to the field just about every day. But I remember talking to Sonny Gray and Kyle Wright, who I thought spun breaking balls really well. And both of them had remained really healthy at that time and posted throughout their entire career on the mound. So I asked them when they learned to spin the ball, and both of them told me, you know, at a young age, about 10 or 11. But, you know, Kyle Wright said, my dad taught me how to spin it correctly. And I said, So I just, you know, at that time frame, I said, you know, Nolan, I'm going to teach you a little bit of how to spin the breaking ball and feel for the change. But when we enter a game, you know, here in the next month and a half, when it gets back going, we're not going to go out and throw, you know, 40 curveballs inside that game. I just want you to realize how the ball spins out of your hand. So I taught him correctly how to spin the breaking ball at a young age, rather than trying to manipulate and make all these shapes through, you know, poor arm action and stuff like that. So that was really phase one. But the big message was, we're also going to go out and pitch with our fastball and get the ball in the zone. We'll use the, you know, the secondary stuff at 11 and 12, you know, in optimal times. So that was step one. But, you know, just continuing to just let him naturally feel it through an old progress of, yeah, that matches what my eyes are seeing, and letting him understand like how the ball comes out of his fingers, rather than, you know, hey, you know, torque it this way or do something this way. It's like, hey, see if you can make that pitch go a little bit more down. See if you can make that pitch go a little bit more, you know, to your right, you know, or sweep it away from the lefty a little bit if you want it. Rather than, hey, you know, get your fingers on top of that thing, rip that thing down, because I don't think young kids understand that stuff personally. I think if you, and then what they do is they, you know, when you give them an external cue like that, they start to mess with their grips a little bit, and they start to feel like how it naturally comes out. And it doesn't happen overnight. It takes catch. You got to play catch, you know, you got to play catch. And you don't always have to be on the mound to feel these things. And you don't always have to be throwing them at max intent. And it just created, you know, a good feel for the ball, you know. And then last year, in his 14th year after middle school, I saw him pitch once, and I told him, like, your changeup needs to really develop. You know, your fastball's good. You spin it well. You got command of it. But you really need to get your changeup going. You really – and, you know, so I want you to play with your grips. But the biggest thing is you need to understand how to stay on it. And, you know, you did a great job with Tyler teaching him a changeup. So once they get that feel of staying on it, then they start to move the seams around a little bit, and, you know, they start to see, hey, well, that thing sunk a little more, or that faded a little more. So, but it's just through, you know, a natural process of playing catch. He's never been on TrackMan. He's never been on Rapsodo or anything along those lines where it's like, oh, you're getting this kind of, you know, movement, you know, and that type of deal. So just try to steer him away from that stuff right now, because I think understanding his skill and feel is the most important.
Well, I try to tell parents all the time that, and, you know, maybe talk a little bit about this from a pitching coach perspective. A lot of pitchers, and the most famous playing catch grip discussion is Mariano Rivera is playing catch, and he finally figures out, you know, the famous cut fastball grip just by playing catch flat ground. You know, and I try to tell parents all the time, pitchers in between starts, they have a throwing partner typically as they get older. And, you know, you go out and you're playing catch with different grips. You're getting acknowledgement from your throwing partner. You both are kind of offering insights as to what you see and what you feel. Talk a little bit about that in between starts. You know, for a college pitcher, we have 7 days. You know, you're out here playing catch. Maybe it was Sonny Gray and you know, on an off day, and he starts to figure out, I'll get a little bit more bite with this breaking ball. But tell parents, you know, it doesn't all have to be based off of technology. It's through playing catch and long toss and just side work during the week.
Yeah, I think that's phase one. You know, I think when you're really trying to feel things, because what happens when we get the technology involved is we start chasing numbers.
Bingo.
And when we start chasing numbers, then we start chasing manipulation, maybe through unnatural movements. And I think that's an area where, you know, if you just go back to playing catch and it's like, hey, I'm trying to do things with this pitch, and you get feedback with your eyes, that's where I always start. I mean, those are the most important days for our pitchers at Vanderbilt, is just how you play catch in between. You know, and I understand people need recovery days and, you know, at this level and as the season goes along, I get it. But the ability to play intentful catch and feel what you need to feel, and you may be working on something, you know, just a little bit of a different shape. Your slider as a college kid has, you know, maybe not as tight. You know, I use Bryce Cunningham as an example. Is, you know, his fastball started to lose a little bit of life to his glove side. So, you know, last week it was, you know, all week the focus was, you know, we need to get that fastball with some good life to your glove side because you're just kind of fading off on it. And it, the focus was, you know, him feeling, and this is a feel, this isn't, you know, fixed for everyone. It's, you know, north, south with his glove side. It just, that creates the feel for him to stay behind his fastball on his glove side. And we did very limited mound work. Most of the work was done playing catch. And then we just, you know, got the feel for, you know, the mound prior to his start, but it was very short lived because he had already felt great in playing catch with it. And that's such a big aspect of just phase. Like, to me, it's phase one. Whether you, if you're trying to create a pitch as a pitcher, you're trying to create feel as a pitcher, you have to be able to play catch with it first. And the big thing is on flat ground is it may not have that most perfect shape because of the angle, but how does it come out of your hand? That's where your throwing partner comes into play. How's it spinning? You know, it may not be this nasty biter right then and there, but you add in the slope of the mound and you understand it, like, that's really going to take off once you get that angle right. The challenge with flat ground a little bit is sometimes guys will want to create the angle on flat ground and then they create some bad habits of just getting too far out in front of their body. So, you know, it does take a little bit of feel to understand where you're at. But playing catch to me is, you talk to all the great ones, you watch them, they do that better than everyone. Kirk Casale was just in my office a couple weeks ago when he was transitioning to AAA. And I asked him about big league pitchers. I said, what do they do? You know, what are these guys that play for a long time? What's the difference between them and the other guys? And he said, you know, mentally, obviously, number one, but their commitment to what they do. They play catch better than everybody else on the field. They condition their bodies better than everybody else on the field. And they're prepared to go into the games. I'm like, wow, pretty simple.
And that's a valuable lesson for young pitchers and families of pitchers. That's really something you should take note of. I would be remiss if I didn't ask this as a final question, because I know that parents are going to just bombard me, but I want to ask you, Kyle Wright, you know, and we talk, I think one of the best to ever come out of, if not the best to ever come out of Vanderbilt, Sonny Gray, as far as from a competitive standpoint. Discuss what is the right way to learn a breaking ball. In other words, just share your thoughts. How was Kyle Wright taught properly by his dad to throw a breaking ball, or Sonny Gray? How were they taught at that 11 to 12 year old time period?
Well, the first thing is just getting the grip right, and understanding, you know, what type of pitch you're trying to throw, and the ability just to feel its spin. And I'd use lighter too as an example here, because Al taught Jack, and you know, the biggest thing that the first thing we talk about is the grip right and keeping the wrist in its position. I think a lot of times what happens with young kids is they want to make moves with their wrist, right, to manipulate the ball, torque the ball. So we just talked about keeping the wrist in the right position. And we started with just a simple horseshoe curveball, if you want to call it, you know, just inside the curve, inside the four seams. Yep. Just right there. And I put my hat on the ground, and Nolan was about 40 feet away, if that. And all I talked to him about was spinning the breaking ball into the hat,
right,
spinning the breaking ball into the hat.
Love that.
So that he could feel the fingers get to the front, and, you know, and it was creating that right spin on it. Knowing that, like, as he started to go, obviously there'd be, the way the arm unwinds, there'd be a little bit more side spin to it, and it would, you know, create a little different shape on it. But the wrist is probably the biggest key to me when I'm talking to a young kid, you know, just in general. I still have to talk to some of our guys about it, because they feel like they want to, you know, really radio dial some things at times. And, you know, as you get older and you start to feel your arm a little bit differently and the muscles are more developed, it's a, you know, then things can change a little bit there. But as a young kid, that's where I'd start, is just, you know, the old expression of pulling down the lampshade type right. deal.
Yep.
You know, it's, that creates the feel for it. You know, there's all these, all sorts of gadgets and stuff that I'm sure you could tinker with out there. But to me, the white thing is the most important thing that we train with. And, you know, that's where I want to create the feel for it first. So,
well, I'll tell you the number one thing I did with Tyler when he was little is I would take a Pringles can or a tennis ball can, and I would tell him, until you can get that tennis ball can to go end over end, you know, if I see a helicopter, we're not throwing that pitch. If I start to see the Pringles can come out. So I just remember doing that. But, you know, Scott, I really want to say thank you. It's the busiest. We're in the height of SEC baseball. I really appreciate, as always, I think there's no one better in the country to talk pitching and throwing, especially from the perspective now as a dad, which I'm thrilled to be able to follow Nolan and you. I'm sure you and Mary and the girls are excited when he throws, and I'm excited to hopefully see him in Commodore country in another few years. And, you know, I'm going to be following that progression. Tyler says to say hello. I just saw him last week when he was in town, and still has his Vandy gear on, by the way, out on the field. So, but tell everybody there and at the Hawk, I said hello. And again, as always, best of luck the rest of the way. I hope the season ends in the big city with the letter O in June.
I appreciate it, Walt. Thank you. And, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say I really appreciate what you're trying to do, you know, for the whole industry. I mean, and I think you're starting at the right level, because the foundation of our sport is our children and our young athletes. So, you know, educating these kids and parents on, you know, methods that could potentially, you know, allow them to have successful journeys throughout baseball. And, you know, I didn't mention major league careers, because I think that's, you know, kind of the cherry on top of the sundae, but successful baseball experiences throughout their time, is great. So, appreciate what you do, and thanks for having me on.
Thank you very much, Scott. And for folks, I really want to let people know, go ahead and hit the subscribe button. It's a, you know, this is the type of information from a baseball perspective that's going to help children or student athletes of all ages throughout the course of their development. And I really want to say thank you today to Coach Brown, and I want to wish and encourage everyone a great season and a great week in baseball. Thank you.